Higher Human Performance, the podcast, episode 274. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Kentra, your host here at Higher Human Performance, the podcast. Brought to you by Bula Network LLC, a boutique executive coaching and consulting firm, my company. You can find all kinds of information over at the website, higherhumanperformance.com. This is episode 274. Stop, look, and listen. Three steps to improve your leadership this week. We'll do it next. What a difference a day makes. Hey, we all say that occasionally. I want you to think about the difference that an entire week can make. Leadership requires skills, lots and lots of skills. And people who work in leadership development or coaching often approach the topic from a variety of angles. I'll admit that there's not one size that fits all. There are some fundamental foundational things, but people are at different stages in life and in their own experience and in their own development of skills and in their circumstances and situation. I mostly focus on the aim of leadership, and that namely is the people being served by leaders. And I realize it may not be the coolest, trickiest approach, but it's intentional, void of gimmicks, and I think most importantly, it works. So this discussion has to start with a sober consideration about humility. Just the other day, I was reading an article. I'll put a link to this in the show notes, which, by the way, you can find over at higherhumanperformance.com. Just over on the right side, there's a search bar. Enter the podcast episode number, it says. And if you'll enter the number 274, take you right there. And I'm reading about a Washington Redskins quarterback, RG3, you know, young man that came out of Baylor down here in Texas and had a phenomenal start, but okay, it's been less than stellar in recent years. And here's what the article said, quote, "To get better in this league, you have to have a degree of humility," a personnel director said. Griffin sees himself like Peyton Manning. In that light, when he looks in the mirror, he is seeing things that everybody else is not seeing. That is why I was surprised when they gave him the fifth-year option and said it was an easy decision. Now, this article had quoted a variety of people in the National Football League who had different opinions, mostly negative, by the way, about Mr. Griffin and his ability to be a really solid winning quarterback in the NFL. Thought it was an interesting observation. I instantly resonated with it because through the years, I've had a few clients, not many, but I've had a few who were leaders that lacked introspection or humility. And I've observed that rare kind of leader who doesn't hear detractors. Most of us do. I've experienced far more of us who hear the lone detractor, even if the majority are cheering. We have an ability to hear that one lonesome person booing us. Okay, not these people. Their minds work in reverse. The vast majority can be booing, but if there's at least one person cheering, they can focus and hear that cheering. I've long been fascinated by that ability because honestly, I think it's more of a curse than anything. It's delusion of a high order, and it stymies personal growth and progress, and it can wreck a team, too. When you're already perfect, improvement's tough to come by. And that's why so few of my clients suffer from this malady. People who feel they need no improvement, they don't go out seeking people like me. Now, unfortunately, sometimes for them, at least, their bosses do. Well, they think it's unfortunate. It's my job to earn their trust and to attempt to persuade them that I'm there to help. Now, you'd think that that'd be easier than it sometimes is. I mean, just stop and think about it. Here I've been commissioned to help them by a boss. I mean, how hard is it to understand that if they improve, I look like a rock star? I mean, it's in my best interest to help them. It's in my best interest to do everything in my power to see that they improve. Because if they don't improve, well, okay, I don't look so good. Let's talk about being open to suggestions. Expansion, growth, increases, improvement. These are things that every business owner wants. We want those things for our business. They all mean more money, more revenues, more profits, more income. More is better. Leaders, organizations, and businesses that are not open to suggestions, ways to get better, they're doomed to slip or fail. Even if current strategies and even if current tactics are working well, they won't necessarily keep working well because strategies and tactics have lifespans. Admittedly, some are more durable than others. Philosophies can last. Well, they can last longer. They can last longer than tactics or strategies. I've implemented many strategies for growing business through the course of my career. Some, they have worked out very well. Others, they've been major failures. But I've stuck with some core philosophies that continue to serve me well, even today. And I've stuck one major philosophy that has been live on my about page for years. It has served me well, and it's why I've stuck with it. Because, well, it's not just because it served me well, but because I so firmly believe in it. And I refuse to deviate from it. You ready for it? Always be honest, be competent, give more, make it right. Always be honest, be competent, give more, make it right. It's my non-negotiable standard for doing business. It's not some highbrow, I'm better than you kind of a deal. It's a real life, honest to goodness way of life. And yes, that means that it trumps everything else. And if it doesn't, what good is it? If you sell out your philosophy, then you've got nothing other than the price that you sold it for. And that first word is very important. Always. Always means always, or it doesn't. It demands the strongest commitment. Let's table any thought of strategy or tactics, and let's stay on track here for a moment about this whole philosophy thing. I want you to think about your philosophy. It's important because it's driving your strategies. It's driving your tactics. It's driving your behavior. It's driving your decisions. And it's also important because it reveals what really matters. It speaks to your character. Mine speaks to my character. So what is your philosophy? If I know your philosophy, and if I know that it's non-negotiable, then I'll know how open you likely are to suggestions for growth and improvement. Yes, I know, and I admit, personalities matter a lot. Communication styles, they matter a lot. But more often than not, the philosophy a person crafts, it's going to reflect or reveal their personality. It's going to reflect or reveal their communication style. Mine does. Always be honest. Be competent, give more, make it right. I can tell you one of the things that should leap out to you immediately on mine is how stupidly simple it is, because I'm pretty much a stupidly simple guy. If you're not open to suggestions of improvement, there's little point in having this conversation, and there's no point in even considering alternative strategies or tactics. I mean, there certainly isn't any point in considering any shift or change in philosophy. Today's episode, this is a three-step strategy for leadership improvement. It's not a magic bullet. It certainly isn't going to be a magic bullet for people with a closed mind, because I don't know of a strategy for a closed mind. And that's why I begun this discussion today with this important factor of being open to suggestions. If that's a problem for you, then you'd better deal with that first. And somebody else can psychoanalyze you if you need help. I'm just going to tell you, if you're struggling with this, I'm going to tell you to figure it out so that you can elevate your performance and the performance of your entire team, because that's what's at stake here. And frankly, for me, that's enough of an upside to compel me, if I'm suffering, having a closed mind, that's enough of an upside to compel me to fix it. So it's about stop, look, and listen. Three steps to improve your leadership this week. I'm not talking about some pie in the sky thing that we're going to do way down the road. No, let's do it now. So first of all, let's stop. Texting and driving, I suppose worldwide, but certainly here in America, it is proving to be a deadly combination. According to USA Today, about 25% of car accidents are caused by cell phone use. And with more and more young drivers joining the ranks every year, I'm supposing that number is likely going to increase. And we're seeing all kinds of television campaigns that are really dramatic, encouraging us to stop texting while we drive. Safety experts encourage all of us to slow down our texting and our driving. No, they don't. Nobody's telling you, just slow down on that texting while you drive. No. You know what they're telling us to do? Stop it. Stop texting. Don't text a little bit. Don't text as much. No, stop texting altogether. When something isn't working, or when something is working against us, it's harming us, like texting and driving, come on, it's the only wise option that we've got. Stop it. Now, there are two fundamental components here to this step. One is to stop doing harm. The second is to regroup, collect our thoughts, consider our options. That's why all this beginning stuff about philosophy and whatnot, being open to suggestions, that's why all that's really critical. Now, the temptation is to keep moving, because too many of us we mistake motion for action, or for accomplishment, or for progress. Do you work out? You do any kind of workout? I do 3 to 4 miles a day on a treadmill. I'm stationary. I'm stationary the entire time, but I'm moving. I'm burning calories. Okay, well, you could argue I'm moving forward in my physical fitness, but geographically, I'm getting nowhere. Too many leaders are perpetual motion machines. Lots of movement, not enough meaningful action. Some leaders don't stop long enough to improve. These are the leaders. They run around shouting, faster, harder, more, more. I mean, it's just movement that matters. And as long as they see people working, it's good. You'd better be in your chair at 8 a.m. And at 4:59, you still better be in your chair. Stop. You can't properly meditate or think deeply enough about improvement if you can't or won't make the time to stop. And I don't want to hear about how busy you are. I don't want to hear about how packed your schedule is, or that you can't stop because there's just so much going on and you're just so necessary. I'm not talking about stopping all the work. I'm talking about you, the leader, stopping your work. I'm talking about you putting the phone on DND, do not disturb. I'm talking about you shutting down your email. I'm talking about you shutting your computer off if you have to. I'm talking about you closing your door. If you prefer to think of this step as pause, that's fine. Hit the pause button. Stop. It's physical, it's mental, it's emotional. And that last one may be the toughest because it involves your willingness to consider and to reconsider. Here's what it means. It means you may have felt one way about things or about people, and you may have it wrong. Stopping long enough to consider it can give you a fresh perspective. In an upcoming episode, I'm going to be talking about evidence-based leadership. That's where your emotional conclusions aren't purely based on how you feel about a thing or how you feel about a person, but you actually have some evidence. And I don't mean one piece of anecdotal evidence that weighs strongly in favor of your feelings. You know, for example, a leader can say, "I don't trust him." Okay. Is it based on evidence or is it purely a feeling? It's important for leaders to avoid letting their emotions pigeonhole their opinions without any evidence to back it up. If the untrusted person has numerous specific incidents of lying, you've got evidence to support your feelings of mistrust. That leads to the next step. Look. First, look inside yourself. Now, I got a question. And it's a question that I want you to really use to examine this whole thing. Are you ready? It's really personal. Am I the problem or the solution? Now, I don't mean what every member of your team thinks, but I mean what you think. I want you to examine your leadership and your management. I want you to look at it more carefully and more closely than you've ever looked at it before. Am I the problem or the solution? Now, every leader, I don't care who you are, every leader can sometimes impact things in a negative way. Our team can see us as part of the problem sometimes because they don't see or understand what we see and understand. Our team can see us as part of the problem if they don't have the confidence to perform. Self-reflection. It's hard when you're trying to answer the big question, am I the problem or the solution? For now, I want you to ignore what you think your team thinks or what you know your team thinks. I don't really care right now about how they feel about the answer to that question. This is about improving your leadership. It's about improving you. So I want you to think clearly and as objectively as possible, and I know that's really hard. Let me help get you started. What's the last big thing that you faced? The last big thing. What's the last big decision? The last big confrontation? The last big project? The last big anything? I want you to think of the latest big initiative, the last episode that involved an employee. I mean, it could be anything. Think about it. You got it? Now, I want you to focus on just one of these, just one example. I don't want you to scrutinize an array of things. I don't want you to think about this, that, and the other. Just pick one. Think of one big thing that you last faced. Now, I want you to do a postmortem on your involvement in that thing. How did you handle it? How did you approach it? And I want you to consider your speed, your approach, your tone, your objective, your priorities, everything else that was going through your mind when you were in the throes of whatever that was. Why did you do what you did? Why didn't you do something else? And why did you do it the way you did it? Reflect on what others did that compelled or motivated you to steer in a direction that you did. Did you maintain focus during the process, or did you allow yourself to be distracted by emotions? Did you worry about somebody or something that caused you to go in one direction as opposed to another? Who was it? What was it? Why did it get in the way? Now, this is the time to get out the microscope and look very, very closely at why you did what you did and why you did it the way you did it. I once did this exercise with a CEO and a founder, and he focused on an interaction. His one thing that he picked was an interaction that he had with one of his direct reports that just frustrated the snot out of him. He began telling me, he's so stubborn. The conversation between these two men had evidently become quite heated because the manager was defending his department's sheer existence. Seems the CEO was questioning the validity of a business segment that was run by this manager. So I'm sitting here and I'm listening as he's recounting this in great detail, by the way, this conversation that the two of them had. Some 45 minutes later, he's beginning to wind down this story. I mean, he's taking as long to tell the story as the interaction that the two of them had. And I'm just along the way, I'm just asking a few prompting questions to keep the thing going. Well, when the CEO came up for air, I asked, does this manager have a future in your company? And he just seemed taken back. He was quite appalled that I would even ask. And he retorted, well, of course he does. The guy's been with me 15 years. Does he know he's got a future even if you downsize or you jettison this department? I asked. Well, sure. Yes, he knows he's got a place here, said the CEO. How does he know? Describe that conversation for me. I wanted to know. Well, within seconds, it dawned on him that he'd never had that conversation with this manager. In his head, he'd had that conversation a lot. He knew what he wanted to do, but he had never shared it with this direct report. Bam! He was the constraint. And he didn't even know it. Didn't even know why. Well, until now. He'd been moving so fast, so furious, it never dawned on him that he hadn't shared critical information with this valued employee, this employee of 15 years. And in the process, he was now beginning to build strong feelings that this guy was just, quote unquote, so stubborn. Now, maybe he was stubborn, but the reaction was spawned by being uninformed. This manager was in the dark, and he was appropriately, in my opinion, frightened about his future, and as it turns out, the future of his team. So I asked the CEO, do you want your leaders to care about their people? Well, of course he did. It seemed to me that he had a manager reporting to him who was behaving perfectly logically and ethically. He wasn't necessarily, like I said, maybe he was stubborn, but I don't think this was necessarily evidence of his stubbornness. He was fighting for himself and for his people, and he did honestly see value in the work they were doing and in the profits they were generating. But like all employees lower down the food chain from the top, he only knew what he knew. He didn't know what the CEO knew, and the CEO had not communicated the challenges, the solutions, the plans. Let me give you one more powerful question before we move on to the last of the three action items, and here it is. You ready? What if you're wrong? What if you're wrong? What if that person isn't who or what you think they are? What if that situation or that circumstance isn't what you think it is? What if things are very different? The strongest leaders I know give themselves to regular thoughts and questions like those. But again, they're all evidence-based leaders, too. They're not prone to knee-jerk reactions. They don't shoot from the hip either. It doesn't mean that they're slow. It just means that they're deliberate. And they're deliberate with cause. So I want you to give yourself permission to be wrong, because last I looked, we're all humans and we are wrong sometimes. Be willing to acknowledge your wrongness with your team. If you want your team to own their mistakes, you'd best get busy owning yours. A leader who refuses to acknowledge his own weaknesses, his own mistakes, is doomed to be surrounded by people who will never, never own theirs. And I'll go you one better. They will never vigorously debate with the leader. And every leader is benefited by people who are willing to vigorously debate for the things they believe in. Such a leader will most often hear what they want to hear. They'll see what they want to see. But here's the crux of it. They'll never get what they want. They'll claim that they want great performance. They want this and they want that. You know what? They're never going to get it. No, never going to get it. All right. Number three, listen. So you've stopped long enough to meditate and to think. You've looked inside yourself to see what role you're playing in solving or creating problems. And now it's time to include some other people. Most notably, your inner circle. Every, and I do mean every, successful leader has at least one person with whom they can shell things down. Some are blessed to have a few people. These are the trusted lieutenants. They are part of your executive team. You trust these people completely. And if you don't, then I'm going to tell you, you're crazy for keeping them around, especially in their current role. You need to be moving them along if you don't trust them, because there's no room for untrustworthy people on your team. I don't care if they perform with spectacular results. If you don't have trust, you got trouble. So you pick which one matters most, trust or trouble. Me, yeah, I'm picking trust, because there's plenty of trouble to go around. I don't need to be hiring trouble. Now, let's assume that you've got at least one person with whom you can be completely honest. You trust them completely. No, that doesn't mean that you tell them everything, but it means that you could. You protect them from information that could unnecessarily worry them, or maybe give them information about things that they've got no control over. But otherwise, yeah, you rely on them for feedback, for support, and for honesty. I'm starting with these people because I'm hopeful that you've got a relationship that isn't built on telling you what you want to hear. Now, I could be wrong, but boy, I hope that's not you. That may be the case. You may be the naked emperor with nobody able to tell you how naked you really are. And if so, then, well, you got more work to do than any single podcast episode can address. I would suggest that you get very, very busy finding a mirror. That's at least one person at work that you're willing to be told unpleasant truths. And if you're not willing to do that, okay, well, then I'm hopeful that your regime comes to a quick, painless end. Well, painless for others. I don't care about your pain. You deserve to suffer whatever you're going to suffer, because you're damaging the lives and the work of other people. I don't much care how your end arrives, but the sooner the better, because the world does not need any more autocratic tyrants. Okay, let's assume you're not the autocratic tyrant. Sit down with your most trusted people at work. Tell them what you're doing. That's right. Let them in on this exercise. Convince them that you want candid honesty. Hey, bring them up to speed with the answers that you have worked out on your own. Tell them that it's only fair for you to expect improvement in yourself, because that's what you're requiring from them. That's what you're requiring from everybody in the organization. It's only fitting that you put pressure and accountability on yourself, right? Persuade them that you mean it. Now, this may be a first for you, and if it is a first for you, then you can expect resistance. That's cool. Press on. They won't likely believe you at first. Now, do not strong arm them. You're not going to force somebody to believe you. You need to pretend that they're customers who must buy what you're selling. So give them the best opportunity to buy it. And it helps if you'll own your past transgressions. If you owe these people an apology, then give it to them up front, without hesitation, without excuse. Shell it all down. Ask them to share what they know, because you need their intelligence. You need their insight. Ask. Before you can listen, you have to ask for help. And this may be the first step in a process of many steps to get people to tell you what you need rather than what you want, or what they think you want. You want the truth, but before you can get the truth, you need information. You need evidence that will direct you to the truth. That means the more information you gather from as many sources as you can, from these most trusted and reliable sources you've got, that can lead you to the truth, but it can at least get you closer to it. Train these people, train your team, your inner circle to open up to you. This isn't happening in front of the organization. This is not happening in front of those outside your trusted inner circle. This is you guys. Yep. There is a we, there is a them. This is the we part of the equation. It's you and your most trusted people working together to help you become a better leader. It's also the most important work that you're going to do because it's going to impact the whole organization. I don't even know your organization, but I think your organization deserves to have the very best leader possible. That's you. This should be the most candid, free-flowing conversation that you've ever had with these people. And you should just ask questions to provoke further conversation. Do not attack. Don't defend. Don't excuse. Think like a detective. Be non-threatening. Come on, you're their boss, so you're going to have to work. You're going to have to work a lot harder at making them know they're safe and comfortable to tell you anything they need to tell you. Be honest with them. Share your concerns, share your fears, share your weaknesses. It's the best way to make them feel comfortable and to trust you. They'll start opening up. They'll start opening up after they know that you're willing to open up as you tell them what you're hoping to accomplish and what you've distilled from your own meditation. Just remember to shut up once you got the ball rolling. You know, some leaders, they'll mess this part of it up by continuing to share and they dominate the conversation. It's just a platform for them to hold forth. No, that's not the point. This is not a platform for you to hold forth. It's a platform for you to get them to open up with you about you. Now, I'm going to make a strong suggestion that you carve out more time than you think you'll need. I'd encourage you to clear calendars for an entire morning or an afternoon. If your organization is formal, don't set tensions high by telling people to clear their entire afternoon for one-on meetings with you or something along that line. If you do that, you are going to heighten their paranoia and their anxiety. Instead, you need to tell the people that are involved or invited to the meeting that you want to have a very casual, informal brainstorming conversation about some ideas that you want to share with them. Tell them there's no agenda and they don't need to bring anything to the meeting and there's absolutely zero preparation that they need to engage in before the meeting. They just need to bring their willingness to share. If you want, hey, have snacks, have soft drinks, whatever might be appropriate for whatever time of day you're having this meeting. Make this very casual, make it very non-threatening. If you can, conduct this meeting. If you have to have a table, find a round table, not a conference table that's got a definite head at either end. Better yet, in my experience, is to just gather around in a loose circle or just you and the other person sitting either by or across from each other if there's just two of you. Arrange it and set it just like you would if you're wanting to have the friendliest conversation that you've ever had. You don't want any barriers to openness. Lose the business speak. Don't let yourself fall into behaving or speaking like you do when you're conducting a formal business meeting. No PowerPoint presentations. No shtick. Talk to these people like they're your friends because they are. Don't speak to them like subordinates or direct reports. Ask them to loosen up and not think of you like their boss, not for this meeting. Instead, I would encourage you to plead with them to treat you like a friend who's asking for and needing their help because that's the truth. Make them know how badly you want it, how badly you need it. Don't be bashful. I mean, that'll defeat the whole point of the conversation. This needs to be an unfiltered conversation where you're open to say whatever. And you, as the leader, you're open to hear whatever they have to say or whatever they have to offer. If you begin to challenge what they say or how they say it, then they're going to stop saying anything useful. So think of this as a free-form brainstorming session that has no rules. I mean, come on. You got to have rules? No, you don't have to have rules. Remember, these are your most trusted advisors, so you don't have to worry about anything with these people. I've had leaders tell me, well, you know, there needs to be some guidelines for proper respect. And yeah, really? You're a CEO and your right-hand person needs to be instructed about manners and politeness and respect, but you trust them completely? Well, you're a moron. I wouldn't trust anybody completely if they didn't possess those skills already. You don't have to preach that sermon to these people, so don't. Some leaders are fearful that these kinds of moments, oh, well, it'll just destroy the professional decorum in the workplace. I mean, if we have that kind of a meeting, these people will look at me differently and our relationship will be changed. It'll be changed, but it'll be changed in a positive way. Listen, when you properly handle this, I have never seen professional decorum go out the window. I would simply encourage you, do not underestimate the professionalism of these people. These are your right hands. These are competent people. These are people fully capable of compartmentalizing sessions like this. Oftentimes I'll help a leader rehearse how to begin and to conduct these sessions because I know it's so foreign to many leaders. They've never experienced anything like this. Most of the clients that I have helped, they overthink it. They fret unnecessarily about it. They're worried about things that just are not a problem. And more often than not, it's among the most rewarding conversations that the top leader has ever had. And it is so ridiculously simple. They wonder why they never did it before. Why didn't I think to do this before? Well, because you were in your own way. Because you didn't stop long enough to consider. That's it. Now, let me kind of add a 3B to these three steps, and that's follow up. It's important that you and your team understand the seriousness of this endeavor. This isn't some phase that you're going through, and it's really important that you make sure your people understand this just isn't the latest, greatest, coolest, trickiest idea that you read out of a book. This is a very serious work project designed to have maximum impact, maximum positive impact on them, on the organization, and on you as the leader. They need to understand how serious you are. And follow up is one way that you can demonstrate that. Specifically, you need to have another session with your inner circle. Give them a few days after this initial conversation. Schedule a second session in the same week. That way they've had time to huddle informally amongst themselves. And you know what's going to happen. I can promise you what's going to happen. What in the world has gotten into him? What in the world is she thinking? Yeah, they're going to have those conversations. That's fine. That's perfectly fine. Because come on, this is a curveball that they have not seen before. Well, assuming that you haven't been this open with them about these kinds of things before, and I'm assuming that's probably true. They also need time to distill their own thoughts. They need time to deal with this. You've already had time to deal with it on your own. They haven't. You've hit them brand new with this. So give them a few days. Your first conversation was without warning. They purposefully didn't know what the meeting was about. They just knew that it was going to be an informal brainstorming session, and it was. Now, they know exactly what you're trying to accomplish. So give them some time to collect their thoughts and bring more value in the next session. Now, there's two important steps that I want you to take to do this. One, I want you to end that first session urging them to think about your goal to improve as a leader and about the things that they've brought up, plus perhaps the things that they have not yet brought up. I want you to give them one simple admonition, and here it is. And you can look them in the eye and you can tell them this. You can use these exact words. I want to make sure that as I work to improve my leadership, that I see and hear things accurately. So I'm going to ask you to help me gather and distill the evidence. For example, then give them an example of a time when you did not get it right. Yeah, it can be one that you confess to them during that conversation. Maybe not. That's up to you, but have one ready. Have one ready to use at the end of this meeting. You want to leave them impressed with your commitment to get it right. And boy, there's just no better way than to acknowledge a time that you got it wrong. And now you're asking them, help prevent that. Help me prevent that in the future. Secondly, I want you to have a brief one-on-one with each one of these. Now, for most leaders, this is a really small group. In many cases, it's just one person. It doesn't matter. However many people comprise that inner circle that you included in that meeting, now I want you to schedule a 15, a 20-minute meeting one-on-one with these people, each one of them. The sole purpose of that meeting is to make sure that they're comfortable with this process. So I want you to just reiterate to them how appreciative you are and how serious you are to grow as a leader. And reinforce the importance in showing them by example how you hope they're going to lead. Sometimes you'll learn what's bothering them about this process. Sometimes you might learn what fears they've got. Okay, this is a perfect time for just the two of you. Have this conversation and address those. All right, let's put a bow on this, shall we? Stop. Give yourself permission and time to think about your leadership. Meditate on how things are and how you'd like them to be. You need to quieten down the noise in your world, and because if you don't, you're never going to be able to hear clearly. You sure aren't going to be able to see clearly. Look. Consider your wins. Consider your losses. I believe in soaring with your strengths, but as a leader, you've got to eliminate as much as you can the constraints that you bring to the workplace. And every leader brings a degree of constraint to the workplace. Think about the places where you may be the problem. See things as they really are, not the way you wish them to be, because accuracy matters. Listen. Involve your closest, most trusted advisors. These are employees who serve as your inner circle. These aren't non-work related people. Let me reiterate that. These are not people outside of work. These people are employees. These people see you for what you are at work. You need to give them a safe environment to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. Carve out time over the course of a week to get this started. Now, don't stop doing it after a week. Use the intensity of 1 week to get it launched. Then make some time regularly to keep it going. I don't know what that looks like. It may look like an hour a week. It may look like an hour a month, but whatever it looks like for you, do that. This includes scheduled times with your inner circle to discuss your leadership. If the work inside your organization is important, and I'm supposing that it is, or at least you think it is, I mean, why else do you even exist? If the work inside your organization is important, then why don't you think work on your leadership is important? That's my question. The outcome of this process will be an improvement in you and your leadership and the impact that it's going to have on your entire organization. Additionally, these leaders that comprise your inner circle, they're going to be dramatically impacted in their own careers as you urge them to avoid neglect in their own leadership growth. Proverbs 18:24 says, "A man that hath friends must show himself friendly." Well, I could apply that same principle to any number of things, including growth as a leader. You must show yourself to be concerned with your leadership. That will make you a better leader. It'll also foster higher human performance throughout your organization. And come on, that's the name of the game. It's the name of the podcast. And there it is. Episode 274, Stop, Look, and Listen, 3 steps to improve your leadership this week. Now, it's Monday. It's Monday, July the 27th, 2015. So this is the week. Make this the week. Get it going and then keep it going. And me, hey, if you'd like to talk about how I might be able to help you and your team, call me. 214-736-4406. Yeah, go to the website. You'll see the phone number. Area code 214 736-4406. Man, I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you listening. I hope you found today's episode helpful. Subscribe to the podcast, won't you? I'd love it if you'd leave me a review over at iTunes. I don't ask for that, and I probably should ask for that more. Everybody claims it helps you get found more. I don't know if that's true or not, but let's suppose it is true. I'd still love to have a review over at iTunes. You can go to the bottom of this post. Just go to higherhumanperformance.com. Frankly, you can probably go to any of the episodes. Scroll all the way to the bottom of that episode, and you'll see a place where you can click on a link that'll take you right to iTunes where you can leave a review for the podcast. As always, brought to you by Bula Network, LLC. Bula Network is a boutique executive coaching and consulting firm, my company. Bula is a Fiji term. Nope, not from Fiji. Never been to Fiji. Would love to go one day. But Bula means both hello and goodbye. It's analogous to aloha in Hawaiian. Means life. In particular, it means life is good. I think it is. So come on. Fell in love with the word about 30 years ago and began to use it in internal memos as a greeting. Bula with an exclamation mark. Yeah, sure. I had to explain it first, but people caught on pretty quickly. Bula Network, LLC. It's the name of the company. If I can be of service, that'd be great. Terrific. If I can't, and the podcast does it all for you, then that's, hey, all the better. You know, guys got to make a living and all that, but I'm happy to help you improve your higher human performance and that of your team. Thanks for listening. My name is Randy Cantrell. The city of origin is Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio.